Crown of Thorns by Iris Bluefig. Chapter 59. Dance at My Wedding, Part 2.
Budge over a bit now. There's a love,
said Madam Tracy, having just got a plateful of Brussels sprouts and bacon situated on a TV tray in front of the sofa.
You've become a regular sprawler, Mr. S. It's a good job I'm going out for the day. There's no room.
They'll take you,
he muttered fondly into his chest, scooting over all the same.
Smells divine.
There's some more of both on the stove,
Madam Tracy continued, shifting the tray closer to him now that he was in alignment with it.
Getting up might be good for your circulation.
Aye, maybe,
Shadwell agreed, grinning at her, taking up his fork with one trembling hand.
Edges, where do you think you're going, down up to the nines like a short-ditch trumpet?
Madam Tracy fetched her handbag from the armchair, rummaging in it for a mirror. She checked her lipstick, satisfied that what she saw in the mirror matched Shadwell's characteristic assessment.
Lovely Amanda's wedding is in a fortnight,
she reminded Shadwell.
We got the invitation just before Christmas, remember? Those dear girls asking me along for the dress hunt.
Age and a family experience, aye,
he agreed reasonably, mouth full.
You're sorting right out.
Ignoring just how much more pronounced the tremor in her husband's hand seemed, Madam Tracy sat down beside him, handbag clutched to her chest.
I'm awfully proud of the children,
she sighed.
Truly. Never had any of my own, of course, aside from keeping Petula.
Between you and Pippa and those southern pansies,
Shadwell observed, turning his head to regard her in a moment of unadorned sincerity.
They're covered for spoiling of the grand parental sort.
I'd always rather fancied the notion of grandchildren,
said Madam Tracy.
But Petula can't conceive, of course, and she never was interested in marriage to begin with. Looks like it all worked out for us in the end.
She patted Shadwell's thigh.
Starting on them sprouts, love.
Petula's a lucky one,
Shadwell remarked after several long seconds, as if he'd finally put together the pieces of a jigsaw.
I mean, you after her parents disowned her and all. When was it she...
17 when she told them,
Madam Tracy said.
21 by the time I'd scraped together enough to help with the transition. She's on better terms now with her mum.
Near much like your sister,
Shadwell remarked gruffly, spearing a sprout.
But aye, fine.
Madam Tracy beamed at him, startled a second later by the sound of the doorbell. She got up.
That'll be my ride,
she told Shadwell, tugging one of her handmade throws off the back of the sofa, tucking it across his lap and down over his shins.
You behave yourself now, Mr. S.
A pair of impatient fists lightly hammered on the front door.
Oi,
Mandy called.
You ready?
Just wait a moment, dear,
she shouted, patting Shadwell on the shoulder as she moved away from him.
I've got to use the loo before we go. Won't be a tick.
Madam Tracy dashed to the bedroom, heart racing, and pulled her tarot deck out of the top drawer. After a perfunctory, pragmatic shuffle, she let her sudden flare of anxiety serve as the question. She flipped three cards onto the bedspread, frowning at what she saw in the startling sequence. The Fool, the Hierophant, the Hermit reversed.
How can I leave you alone for even a moment?
She murmured fretfully, gathering them back. She put her deck back in the drawer, taking a moment to fix her smudged eyeliner.
Coming!
She emerged to find that her living room was now populated by Mandy, Sophia and... Adam? The young man sat next to Shadwell on the sofa. The girls stood next to the door.
It's about time,
Shadwell said, squinting at her.
Keep these lovely lasses waiting, why don't you?
Good afternoon, Madam Tracy,
said Adam, waving politely.
Thought I'd keep the sergeant company if it's all the same to you. Soph reckons I've got the dress sense of a horse.
Dunno,
Mandy said flatly.
I might look right fetching in one of them blanket things.
He'll be grateful of your presence,
Madam Tracy told Adam, and then went to join the girls.
Let's get on with it,
said Sophia, jangling the keys in her right hand.
Bargains wait for no man.
Nor no woman, neither,
Shadwell grumbled.
Away with you, harlot. We'll see you come supper.
Thank you,
Madam Tracy mouthed to Adam once Shadwell's eyes were back on the telly. As Irafel tried pushing the thumbtack between the fine braided wires comprising the fairy light strand, only to have it wobble and flip between the wall and his thumb, he swore.
"That'll hurt,"
Crowley said, rushing over from where he'd been busy checking each element of the flower delivery Jamie had made half an hour before. He gazed up at Aziraphale from the foot of the ladder, hands outstretched.
"Let me see,"
he said, tongue darting distractedly between his lips. Aziraphale turned, extending his hand, pinprick-blooded thumb first, for Crowley's inspection. Crowley took Aziraphale's hand in both of his own, licking the spot before pressing his lips to it.
"Was that really necessary?"
Aziraphale sighed, somewhat shakily, not even making a question of it. Heat blossomed in his gut, reminding him of the time he hadn't even been able to concentrate on set painting for thoughts of Crowley, but little else happened. Crowley's eyes flicked up to meet Aziraphale's, half-lidded and tempting.
"Is anything?"
"Are the flowers in order for tomorrow?"
Aziraphale asked, stroking Crowley's lower lip with the miraculously healed pad of his thumb.
"I won't stand for mishaps, not given what we owe her."
"Yes,"
Crowley insisted.
"Jonquils, gladiolas, lilies, tulips. Cheat on those and have done with it."
Aziraphale sighed, letting Crowley help him down the ladder. One forceful thought banished it to the back corner of the shed, where, no doubt, Lilith would resume her preference for perching on the lower rungs. Lights strung themselves about the remainder of the cottage without complaint.
"I'm not convinced Monday the 13th is any better than Friday of same,"
he confessed. Crowley shrugged, forearms draped over Aziraphale's shoulders, leaning in achingly close.
"Not an auspicious day for decorating, clearly,"
he remarked, nuzzling Aziraphale's cheek, sucking in his breath when Aziraphale tugged their hips flush.
"What's the matter? You've been having difficulty lately. Is it something I've done? Something I haven't?"
"It's not for lack of desire,"
Aziraphale huffed, determined to make it up to Crowley, just like he'd been doing for weeks.
"Or for lack of trying. You know that, my dear."
"Better tell me what's going on,"
Crowley said.
"I can only endure so many stoic blowjobs."
"I'm distracted,"
Aziraphale admitted, stroking Crowley's hair, wondering if he'd killed the mood completely.
"Concerned, one might say. About Amanda, most of all, but Raphael seems to think there's something Uriel's not telling him. Secrets among archangels, lovers, no less, bodes ill for all of us."
He groaned, resting his forehead against Crowley's.
"And there's Pippa."
Crowley nodded, thumbing along Aziraphale's lower lip, mirroring Aziraphale's action of moments before.
"You've told me 1,000 times what we've got to do,"
he said gently.
"We try. For them, for us, for everyone. Nobody said it was going to be easy. Least of all you."
Aziraphale let his head drop to Crowley's shoulder.
"My efforts are hardly sufficient, one feels,"
he whispered, fanning his fingers at Crowley's shoulder blades.
"You were always better at this."
"Better at what?"
asked Crowley, disbelieving, his mouth warm against Aziraphale's neck.
"Being what we are,"
Aziraphale insisted, clinging to him so hard that they both forgot to breathe. An insistent knock at the door startled them apart, left them blinking wordlessly at each other.
"I'll get it,"
Crowley said, taking Aziraphale's face briefly in both hands, leaving him with a kiss. Aziraphale didn't even have time to collect his thoughts, much less move to do something useful like putting on the kettle. Crowley escorted Pippa inside, thumbs hooked through his belt loops.
"Finished already?"
Pippa remarked in amazement, her eyes tracking fairy lights around the periphery of the ceilings.
"My, my. And here I thought You said you'd only just be getting started.
We got an earlier start than we thought,
said Crowley, gesturing over at the flowers.
We'll wait till tomorrow morning to set those around. No use jostling them more than necessary.
Pippa let go of Crowley, leaning on her cane. She stepped up to Aziraphale, unnervingly close.
You look as if you've seen a ghost,
she said, imploringly cautious.
Whatever's the matter?
Aziraphale licked his lips, noting the way that her eyes narrowed, which was the way they'd been narrowing for nigh on a while whenever she happened to notice details and timing were amiss.
Perhaps we ought to do the flowers now,
he said, putting on a reassuring smile.
No harm in it.
Behind Pippa, Crowley made a perplexed face at him.
But why do that when we could go eat?
Pippa smiled sweetly as if to back Crowley up.
There's no harm in it, all those corners you cut.
She's onto everything,
Aziraphale thought.
And she should have been the first we told.
I'll just leave you to a moment,
said Crowley awkwardly.
And go feed the girls. You'd better have thought up some place to go by the time I get back. Maybe not the usual.
Aziraphale nodded, watching him fetch the mealworms and some diced papaya from the fridge. Shoving the sliding glass door open with his shoulder, he wandered outside barefoot, not even bothering with flip-flops and a coat. So much for Aziraphale's duty as mindful spouse. Pippa shuffled past Aziraphale and helped herself to a seat at the dining room table. She watched Crowley open the door to the shed, besieged by bills and wings, before he'd even got the door shut.
You're about to discover the joys of grand chicks, or so I hear?
She asked conversationally.
Within a week or two,
Aziraphale confirmed, coming over to sit beside her.
Yes.
Pippa set her hand over Aziraphale's as soon as he'd settled at the table, her eyes imploring.
Whatever it is,
she said steadily,
whatever you're afraid of, I should like you to know.
The frantic waving of Crowley's arms caught their attention. He hung halfway out of the shed's reopened door, wild-eyed, mouthing something that Aziraphale couldn't quite make out.
What?
Aziraphale asked, knowing full well Crowley couldn't hear him.
What on earth?
Crowley made a frustrated face, which caused Pippa to laugh. He disappeared inside the shed, reappearing in the doorway several seconds later with something dull olive-coloured in his hand. He made an incredible show of pulverising it in his fist, sprinkling the shards outside the shed.
Oh, good heavens!
Pippa said, getting to her feet, heading for the door.
The babies are here.
So much for dinner,
Aziraphale sighed, but he was already returning Crowley's manic grin.
This is unreal,
Raphael said, remaining just inside the shed door, careful not to step in the duck's mess of straw.
I'm standing here in my best dress, and you're mucking about in a suit.
I've got to make sure they're all right before everyone arrives,
Crowley said, doling out pieces of fruit to the five ducks not busy guarding a nest.
They'll get lots of company later.
Judith, the one perched next to a pile of straw in which three tiny ducklings wriggled and flapped and squeaked their heads off, tilted her head at Raphael as if to size up whether he was a threat.
What are they called?
Raphael asked, wrinkling his nose as he accepted a piece of something tropical from Crowley. He picked his way over just far enough to extend his offering to the new mother, who plucked the fruit daintily off his palm with a waggle of her tail feathers.
Rob's got dibs on naming the kids,
Crowley explained, dropping to a crouch next to the nest.
Jude's always been his favourite, and Pippa's too. Nicola's bringing him at the weekend.
How she hasn't pecked your eyes out by now, I can't even imagine,
said Raphael, backing away as Jude unbelievably sidled up to Crowley and watched as her brood nibbled his fingers.
Well, you're forgetting that I'm her mum,
Crowley explained, shrugging.
More or less.
Forget lambs and lions,
Raphael said, smiling in spite of himself.
You're ridiculous, darling.
Wouldn't have it any other way, not coming from you,
replied Crowley, dusting his hands off as he got to his feet. He straightened his vintage white jacket, dignified if adorably awkward.
Let's go back inside,
Raphael suggested, turning for the door.
Uriel's in one of her moods.
I can't imagine which one that might be,
Crowley muttered, following him out.
So specific.
They found Uriel, Pippa, and Sophia in the kitchen, all three of them watching various pots and the cupcakes in the oven with terse expressions. Crowley shooed everyone except Sophia into the dining room, so Raphael took the opportunity to get Uriel seated and a shot of whiskey down her. Uriel gulped a third of the contents, handing back his flask.
Don't let me go in the living room.
Darling, I don't...
Raphael gave her a helpless look, taking a long swig.
Why should I do that?
Please,
Uriel pleaded, a sudden white-knuckled grip on his arm, strangely terrifying.
All right,
he said smoothingly, stroking her cheek.
We'll stay right here if that's what you want.
It's not what I want,
she said, watching Pippa amble into the living room to join the rest of the humans who'd assembled there while Raphael was outside with Crowley.
It's what I don't.
Judging by the voices Raphael could pick out, the living room crowd was sizable. Aziraphale, Adam, Anathema, Newt, Natalie, Janet, Danny, Pippa, Rani, Mary, Jamie, Shadwell, Tracy, and a voice he couldn't place. By process of elimination, he assumed it was the mother of the bride.
Shouldn't there be more strangers than that?
He ventured.
The groom's folks up from Spain?
Sophia, overhearing the conversation, dashed over with her phone in hand.
Keep your voice down,
she said tersely.
Yeah, that's Mandy's mum in there, but Ivan's family are AWOL.
Raphael nodded slowly, lips twisting in distaste. He'd seen Mandy's distress at New Year's and been party to Crowley's brief assessment.
And where are the bride and groom?
He whispered. Sophia took the chair to Uriel's left, which situated her directly across from Raphael. She motioned for the flask, so Raphael handed it over.
I've no fucking clue,
she said, rolling her eyes.
And I'm the officiant, since now I've got piddling civic authority.
If not for this, I would have called wedding eve ducklings a good omen,
Uriel said morosely. Raphael squeezed her wrist.
Don't talk like that just yet. For all we know, she forgot the veil.
Maybe they eloped,
said Crowley, sauntering over. He sat down next to Raphael, making grabby hands across the table. Sophia handed him the flask.
Gretna Green's just far enough for comfort.
And I'd hate to break it to the senior Miss Tomlin that her daughter's just buggered off to the very country she's come from by train,
Sophia groused, snatching back the flask once Crowley had drunk his fill.
Mandy's not answering my texts, and neither is that good for nothing.
They all stared at her, the combination of foreboding and alcohol buzz settling heavily over them.
I'd better go pull the cupcakes,
said Sophia, hesitantly getting to her feet.
Don't go anywhere.
Watching Uriel bury her face in her arms against the laptop was about all Raphael could stand. He sat back in his chair, gulped what remained in the flask, and turned to an ill-at-ease Crowley.
We've got a real problem on our hands,
he enunciated thickly.
Get Az in here now.
Right,
Crowley said, getting to his feet so fast his chair almost tipped over.
Just a second.
Stay with me, darling,
Raphael whispered, tugging one of Uriel's hands up to his mouth.
Whoever it is, whatever that scythe-swinging bastards asked you to do, we're going to—
Don't you mention him.
Uriel seethed, face still hidden in the crook of one arm.
Don't.
Oh, dear,
said Aziraphale stiffly, following Crowley into the room.
Why is it we can't seem to—
Tall, dark, and tattered paid her a visit in December,
Raphael said.
I thought it was nothing.
Shit.
Aziraphale spat, snatching the flask from in front of Raphael, only to find it empty.
The other issues that Gemma is asking after her daughter and son-in-law-to-be,
Crowley said. It was only then that Raphael noticed that Uriel had begun to shake, shivering so hard that the whole table was vibrating. He hauled her out of her chair and into his lap, holding her fast. Wings and a blinding halo, burning silver eyes, they couldn't risk it.
Don't listen to whatever nonsense he put in your head,
Raphael whispered, stroking her hair.
Believe me, I...
Uriel grimaced at him, features terrible and pale.
I'm trying my best.
Well, much longer and the food will be ruined,
Crowley sighed, leaving to help Sophia shut down all the life sources of heat and transfer various sweets and savouries onto serving dishes.
C'est la vie.
Gemma Tomlin, resplendent and dignified in a knee-length midnight blue topshop number that Raphael recognised from a window on the high street, came into the living room with Natalie and Janet straggling along behind her. Their expressions of worry were uncannily identical.
Do you have any idea where my daughter is?
Gemma asked Aziraphale, hard-eyed. Raphael pressed Uriel's face into the crook of his neck, still stroking her hair.
Please,
he thought.
Please, whoever might be listening, don't let her... Don't take someone, don't let her...
Aziraphale got up and came around the far end of the table, graciously intercepting Gemma.
I've just been reading that there's a spot of traffic due to that construction a mile up, so I'm sure...
The front door of the cottage swung wide, and Mandy, pale lavender from head to toe, strode through it. Her upswept hair was uncovered, her face tear-streaked in lieu of a latticed veil.
He left,
she said, brandishing something in her outstretched hand.
Gone early, before I even...
Raphael watched as Crowley took the crushed note from her, folding the distraught girl in his arms. As if sensing her cue in some terrible relay race, Sophia took the note from Crowley and rushed it to Gemma. They scrambled to open it so that they could devour whatever information lay within. Natalie and Janet crowded up behind them, joined in short order by nearly everyone else from the living room. That kind of commotion was difficult to ignore. Raphael stayed where he was, and Uriel clung to him just as hard as Mandy, sobbing her heart out, clung to Crowley.
That fucking bastard,
Sophia blurted, letting go of the note, surrendering it entirely to Gemma.
He took a job,
Mandy grated out, loudly enough to silence everyone else in the room.
A fucking job at some new 5-star in Spain. And there's, I don't know, somebody, so...
Oh, my dear girl,
said Aziraphale softly, but he didn't move from his place at Gemma's side. Crowley met Raphael's eyes across the distance, his chin tucked over the top of Mandy's head as firmly as Aziraphale's was now tucked over Uriel's.
Mirror, mirror,
Raphael thought.
How close to the tree we both fell.
This is gonna be a really bad day,
Uriel whispered.
I can already fucking tell.
Mandy sat trembling on the edge of the bed, sodden tissues in hand. She was simultaneously grateful and irritated that her mum, arm tight about Mandy's shoulders, huddled close beside her.
Was it some girl?
Asked Gemma, furious, eyes tracking repeatedly over the note.
Some boy?
Doesn't say,
Mandy sighed, feeling wrung out as she blew her nose again.
Doesn't matter.
When it's my only child left at the altar, it matters,
insists Gemma.
I'm going to right that charlatan's family. Don't think I won't. It'll be the last time a man takes advantage of us.
Perversely, Mandy felt the urge to laugh. So she laughed and laughed and laughed until she was in tears all over again. Her mother let go of her, getting up off the mattress, arms folded.
It doesn't matter, Mum,
Mandy said, choking till she could force a bitter smile.
In the end, I wasn't good enough. Not to him. Not what he was looking for, yeah? You get it?
You are good enough, Amanda,
insisted Gemma reproachfully.
No, you are better.
Mandy nodded in agitation, fighting off a fresh wave of grief. She hopped to her feet, strolling over to study her reflection in Aziraphale's full-length mirror. She was a fright, mascara running, hair escaping its pinned arrangement. She fancied herself a furious, vengeful spirit. Even after she'd found the note in the kitchen, she'd still showered and dressed for the occasion. Shock could get you through a lot, and so could denial. But by the time she'd driven half the distance to the cottage, reality had set in. She'd had to pull over to get herself under control.
Yeah,
Mandy said to her reflection, meeting her mother's eyes in the mirror.
You know, I am.
She blew her nose again, dropping the wad of tissues on the carpet, shredding it with one sharp heel.
This is going to be something even better,
she said, turning for the door.
You watch.
Amanda, sweet one, please take a moment.
Gemma's pleading followed her up the hall.
Listen up, you lot,
said Mandy, marching into the open area between kitchen and dining room, not at all shocked when about a dozen voices fell silent and as many pairs of eyes snapped to attention.
This is now my anti-wedding party. The fucky van soiree of the century, if you will.
She nodded to Crowley, indicating that he should follow her over to where a whole segment of worktop was populated by bottles of champagne.
I can see about a quarter of you are hammered already. Hip flasks. Nice thinking. So allow us to get you the rest of the way to smashed. Let's eat, yeah?
Satisfied by the subdued cheer that went up amongst the company, Mandy met Crowley's hesitant, rueful smile with one of her own and tossed him his well-loved Lagriole waiter's corkscrew. Doling out glasses to her friends, her family, her nearest and dearest, helped to take her mind off the seething agony behind her eyes. The burn of it, made flesh in her tear ducts, somehow made her loss easier to bear. Distantly, through myriad offered consolations, she wondered if what she wept was holy water. Even after almost everyone had milled about drinking, eaten their fill, and followed Crowley outside to see the new arrivals, Mandy noted that Raphael and Uriel hadn't budged from the dining room table. Before she could stroll over to ask them why the hell they weren't in the garden, one of the only other parties still in the house lightly touched her elbow, waylaying her.
I didn't mean to startle you,
said Jamie.
Forgive me, your day has been difficult enough.
Mandy stepped back over to the counter and refilled the first two empty glasses she could find, shoving one of them into his unsuspecting hand.
Drink with me, and you're forgiven.
As if he couldn't argue with that, Jamie nodded and swallowed half the glass.
I have a story.
Right now,
said Mandy, the corner of her mouth twitching.
Any story's better than mine.
Even speaking from many years' experience, I cannot convince you the pain of this will fade,
Jamie began, earnestly seeking Mandy's averted gaze.
That is not what I meant by telling you this. Long, long ago I was married. I love her. We have two children together, even two children grown, with lives and stories of their own. That is not the point either.
I'm beginning to wonder where this is going,
Mandy confided tipsily.
But I'm invested.
Jamie flushed and set his glass aside, forging on.
Long, long before that, my grandfather's people were forced from their homes. They walked out of the forest and into structures made of steel and glass and the corpses of their trees. Their world, like mine, like yours, ended.
Mandy nodded slowly, finishing what must have been her third glass of champagne.
I think...
The point is, they didn't have a choice,
Jamie said.
Not like I had, not like you have.
I get it,
said Mandy, grinning at him, her eyes spilling over.
But the meantime's shite, yeah?
Jamie opened his arms, so she went to him, clapping him on the back. Mary had done all right.
Oh, my poor love,
said Madame Tracy, amongst the first to traipse in from the chill. She rubbed between Mandy's shoulder blades while an equally tearful Jamie released her.
I'd got him alive.
Mandy had to laugh at such a vehement statement coming from a woman who she was convinced couldn't hurt a flea. On the other hand, she'd once survived sharing a body with the Xerophale.
She'd do it too,
said Anathema, wobbling in with an even wobblier newt on her arm.
That motorbike helmet of hers might look twee, but she's ridden with the roughest of them.
Newt looked nervous about the direction his wife's ramble had taken. Wisely, he said nothing.
Poor thing. She must be ill,
he said instead, nodding over to where Raphael had left an out-cold Uriel at the table. She stirred as they glanced in her direction, sitting up, blinking at the room. Something flickered at the back of Mandy's mind, uneasy prickle of memory as her eyes were the only ones left on Uriel. She watched as the archangel rose trance-like from her seat and... Wings. Silver. Blinding. Maybe nobody else could see them, but Uriel had them, sure enough.
Carry on,
said Mandy tautly, somewhat relieved that the knot around her had resumed talking to each other. She slipped away from where she'd been standing between Jamie and Madame Tracy, kicking out of her inconvenient heels as she rushed to follow Uriel into the living room.
What is it that she does again?
Thought Mandy, frantically crossing the low-lit room to find Shadwell asleep in the tartan armchair.
Dominion over the souls of men. Oh, no,
said Mandy softly, touching Shadwell's shoulder. She looked up. Uriel stood behind him with tears in her eyes, her right hand resting on the other.
Don't,
Mandy whispered, shaking Shadwell with both hands now.
Don't you dare. This day's been hell enough for all of us, hasn't it? Hell enough for me.
She gritted her teeth, working a hand between Shadwell's vest to press her palm flat over his heart.
Don't do it, mate. There's been nothing but trouble since you came. I won't fucking let you.
She glanced over her shoulder, out into the kitchen at Madame Tracy, who was chatting blithely away with Anathema, Newt and Jamie.
Sure, he's an old git, but he's Tracy's old git, and I'm not going to tell one of my elders she could have done better. You follow? So stop it. I charge thee. Stop.
How can I?
Uriel asked desolately, her grasp on Shadwell's shoulder tightening.
I promised.
Break it,
Mandy cried, slapping Shadwell's cheek now.
Come on, come on, resist.
Uriel let go of Shadwell, stepping back as if she'd been dealt a shock.
We're already stuck here.
You're telling me,
Mandy muttered, her heart racing with relief as the old man drew a terrible, laboured gasp and continued to breathe in spite of his waxy complexion.
Hey, you all right?
Hey, sweet lass. Which way that no good shite-for-brained Spaniard go?
Shadwell rasped.
Fuck!
Uriel said, wings extinguished, producing her mobile.
I'm calling an ambulance.
Mandy started to cry again, but she was smiling this time. She found that she couldn't quite stop.
Oh, I think I saw him jump in the channel,
she said, keeping Shadwell in his seat.
Brexit, innit?
At least it likes you,
Shadwell said, covering Mandy's hand with his shaky fingers, his eyes darting frantically around the room, doubtless in search of Madame Tracy.
Ambulance.
Just stay calm now,
replied Mandy, wiping her nose with her free hand, listening in on Uriel's conversation with the staff at St. Richard's.
I thought we'd lost you, mate. I really did.
Shivering in the driveway, in spite of his dress shirt and jacket, Crowley steadied Madame Tracy while Gemma steadied Mandy as the ambulance pulled away. Too many parallels, too much pain.
I knew something wasn't quite right,
murmured Tracy hollowly.
For weeks and weeks on end.
I'll drive you to the hospital,
Crowley replied, nudging her elbow.
Come on, let's go in and get your things.
He guided her back to the front steps, followed by the Tomlins.
And for what it's worth, these things are never anybody's fault,
he said, remembering Harold.
They just happen.
The cart had it right,
Tracy lamented.
Not just about Mr. S. Everything.
In the process of hunting for her handbag, they wished the twins, Danny, Newt and Anathema, goodbye. They also found Rani gathering her coat and purse from the bedroom.
What a right bollocksed up day it's been,
she crooned, hugging Madame Tracy tightly while Crowley looked uncertainly on.
Shall I run you down to St. Dick's, then? I'll sit with you till they know what's what, pet. I don't live but a mile from there. You can stay at mine.
Crowley opened his mouth and shut it several times before finding his voice.
It's all right,
he told Rani.
Really? I was about to take her down myself because I'm not much use otherwise.
Get your arse back out there to the kids,
Rani scolded.
Your man too. Run along.
Fine,
Crowley stammered, hugging Madame Tracy one more time.
Yes, Keen.
Emerging, she grinned from the hall into the kitchen. Crowley almost smacked face first into Mandy.
Guess that means Mum and I don't have to run her to hospital?
She asked, still red-eyed.
Rani's got the take-charge attitude none of us deserve,
Crowley muttered, scrubbing at his face with both hands.
Gemma,
he said, turning to Mandy's mother.
I'm truly, truly sorry.
Unless you fixed my treasure up with that trash, there's no need,
Gemma said reassuringly.
Nobody fixed me up with him,
said Mandy, sounding impossibly weary.
Did it myself.
Take your mum home,
Crowley told her.
Keep drinking or get some sleep or... Listen, I have no idea. Do whatever it's going to take to achieve catharsis and take the rest of the cupcakes.
Tearful again, Mandy winked, breaking into a grin.
Mind if we take the rest of the champagne?
2 bottles,
said Gemma, taking up her daughter's arm.
1 each. Good night, Mr. Crowley.
Good night,
Crowley said, collapsing on the edge of the mattress as they left him alone. Drained, he let his eyes take stock of the darkened bedroom, observing how the full-length mirror caught eerie reflections of light filtering in through the blinds. He heard Mary and Jamie outside, the pair in heated conversation as they got into their car.
That leaves me with Aziraphale and Sophia for clean-up,
Crowley thought.
And?
Thought I might find you here,
Adam said, silhouetted in the half-open doorway.
Brooding.
Where's your wife?
Asked Crowley, as Adam came over to sit beside him.
And Aziraphale?
Getting a head start on the mess,
Adam told Crowley, hands folded in his lap.
Like they do.
Crowley couldn't even argue with that, so he nodded. No matter which end of the mess it was, you could always count on Aziraphale or Sophia to get a smashing jump on everybody else.
I feel like there's something you might need to get off your chest,
Adam said, unfolding his hands, loosening his endearing terrier print tie.
Something you'd like to say to me, yeah?
You could have stopped all this from happening,
Crowley insisted.
Could have kept them safe.
He glanced sidelong at Adam, all but pleading, watching Adam's eyes widen and catch pinprick sparks of the glow from his own.
After what happened with Soph a while back, aren't you just...
He spread his hands in supplication, shuddering as he drew breath.
Tempted to seal them away.
Adam seemed to seriously consider this proposition for a moment, but his demeanour went calm.
You can't keep people in jars. Besides, it's bad enough that's exactly what I've done with you two.
If that's what we're going to call this, then you've got to face up to just how many non-humans you've bound,
Crowley pointed out,
and how inconsistent your rules are at times.
Two,
said Adam, pointing to a photograph of Aziraphale and Crowley on the dresser.
Four,
he said, pointing to the window just outside of which Uriel and Raphael, forgotten until that moment, huddled smoking against the wall of the cottage.
Six,
he said, pointing heavenward. Crowley imagined Gabriel and Michael bickering away.
Eight,
he finished, pointing towards hell.
Ten,
Crowley amended, his lips twitching.
Four of them down there, remember?
13, if you count the horse persons, I suppose,
said Adam dully.
Death doesn't count.
He meddled with Uriel,
Crowley replied, furious.
Tried to get her to do his job. Why?
Well, he did take a pot shot at me there at the end. Remember?
Adam scrunched up his features, looking impossibly young.
I am Azrael, created to be creation's shadow. You cannot destroy me. That would destroy the world.
Never do that again,
said Crowley, shuddering.
That's entirely too good an impression.
Adam shrugged.
We're holding the world together as best we can, but it's his job to unmake bits of it here and there. I reckon he got tired of how efficient we've been. Wanted to even the score.
If Shadwell survives,
Crowley ventured quietly,
then we'll have won again, won't we?
Something like that,
said Adam, clapping Crowley's shoulder.
Another zero-sum game.
Jesus,
Uriel said, easing her ear away from the glass, releasing her breath on a final puff of smoke.
No wonder Crowley can't weather those talks of theirs without going a bit spare.
Raphael nodded, getting to his feet, brushing himself off.
We ought to bid them good night.
Yeah,
Uriel sighed, hugging herself against the increasingly frozen air.
Today's my bad.
Don't let him bully you like that next time,
Raphael said.
If you have to, call us all in.
Uriel nodded, heading towards the front of the house, leading the way.
Lesson learned.
Before they could even mount the stairs, a cyclist came tearing up the road. She skidded to a halt in the driveway, sending frost glitter gravel across Uriel's bare feet and Raphael's stockinged ones.
Hey,
said Mandy, letting her bike fall on the spot as she hopped off. She changed into her university logo sweatshirt, skinny jeans, and silver sequined flats.
Mum's out cold. She's a lightweight.
She scrubbed at the side of her face, a mannerism not unlike Crowley's when under stress.
I got most of it out of my system. Still feel like arse, though. Can you...
Uriel felt a pang as Mandy ignored her in favour of approaching Raphael, tugging one of Raphael's hands up against her forehead and the other against her belly.
I deserve this,
she thought.
I charge thee,
she said.
Only, well, hangover prevention's a pretty low-key charge.
Raphael was silent for several long seconds before he burst out laughing and did as she asked.
Comparative religions major,
he said, pulling his hands away, wiping his eyes.
Good one.
More like a good two,
said Mandy, eyeing Uriel, seeming brighter already.
That was a close call earlier,
she said.
You didn't look right. You weren't yourself. I remember how that feels.
My essential aspect is my least favorite part of myself,
Uriel admitted, starting for the front door.
Come on, you hosers. It's cold as balls out here. I don't want to think about this right now.
As Uriel's luck would have it, they didn't make it inside the house. Sophia dashed down the front walk and came to them, each breath she expelled rolling fog-like in the sunset-kissed air.
"Come around out back,"
she said, tugging Mandy along by her sleeves.
"You've got to see this."
30 seconds later, the four of them were huddled inside Crowley's avian heat lamp paradise.
"You were right,"
said Uriel, stunned, hanging back with Raphael as the girls sat in the straw and cuddled Judith's hatchlings.
"These ducks would never survive in the wild. They're too tame."
"It's a pity the naming ceremony is to be left in the hands of a schoolboy,"
Raphael remarked.
"Yeah, we named the first batch,"
said Mandy, smirking at Sophia.
"We got 'em good, I think."
"Rob's likely to give these kiddos names with less baggage,"
Sophia replied.
"Thank God."
Just when Uriel thought she'd worked up enough courage to tempt Jude's wrath and pet the squeaking balls of fluff, Crowley burst into the shed, crowding it. Aziraphale was behind him.
"Let's get some air,"
he suggested, watching with approval as Mandy and Sophia scooped the ducklings back into Jude's nest.
"It's past their bedtime anyway. I'm amazed the others stayed asleep with all of you yammering,"
he said, studying the huddle of 5 grown sisters. Jude rejoined her offspring in the nest, nipping affectionately at Mandy's fingers as she settled.
"I'll second that,"
Uriel said, backing Aziraphale out of the doorway so that they both stood in the cold.
"It'll be nighttime soon. Who wants to go for a walk on the beach?"
The sound of unchained melody erupting suddenly from someone's mobile startled all of them, although it turned out the perpetrator was Mandy. She held the device out at arm's length.
"You owe me a dance,"
she said to Aziraphale, and then shifted her glance to Crowley.
"You too."
"Can't argue with that, darling,"
said Raphael, elbowing Crowley.
"Will you dance with me after?"
"Don't push your luck,"
Aziraphale said warningly.
"Next in that queue, he's very much taken."
While Adam came down from the house to join them with a bottle of champagne in hand, Mandy left the boys and Sophia to their bickering, urgently taking hold of Uriel's hand.
"Come with me,"
she said, tugging her up and over the seagrass-scattered rise.
"I need a witness."
Before Uriel could ask what she'd be witnessing, Mandy had kicked out of her ballet flats and dragged Uriel down to where the sand was saturated, the tide lapped at their toes, taunting.
"If the channel wants him, the channel can have him,"
Mandy said, twisting the ring off her finger. She studied it for a moment in the hush-filled dusk, listening to the waves.
"Count for me."
Uriel took Mandy's meaning without having to be asked twice, heart suddenly buoyant with hope.
"1,
she said, making firm eye contact with Mandy, watching the wind-up.
2, 3!
Mandy flung the ring as far and hard as she could, stumbling knee-deep into the freezing surf.
"That felt..."
she panted, wading back in towards the shore, tucking her hands in the kangaroo pocket of her sweatshirt.
"Really great. Like, perfect ending to a perfect day kind of great."
Something shimmered darkly on the horizon, catching Uriel's attention. She froze, staring at it.
"Get up there and claim your dances,"
she told Mandy, attempting levity.
"I'll only be a minute."
"Sure thing, weirdo,"
Mandy said, patting Uriel on the shoulder as she passed.
"Don't freeze."
Night fell as death loomed over the sea, unfurling his star-studded cloak over all of creation.
"You will suffer with them till the last,"
said Azrael, disembodied, omnipresent.
"Till the last of them is gone. Till kingdom come."
"The kingdom's come and gone,"
Uriel said.
"For better or worse, it's theirs. We only live in it."
"And when they're gone, when you inherit the earth, you and your angelic cohort and the principality's demon lover?
Azrael asked.
What then?
I don't have to answer that,
said Uriel, wading into the surf.
Not yet. Wait and see.
Crown of Thorns will continue in chapter 60.